Hardeman Nichols was supposed to teach this class, and somebody said, are you going to pinch hit for him? And the answer is no. A pinch hitter is when you got somebody on the bench that is better than the batter. That's why you put a pinch hitter in. I'm going to substitute for him. When the guy in the outfield breaks his leg or something, then you bring in a substitute, and he's just whatever's got left on the bench. So I want you to know that I was so much looking forward to hearing Hardeman on this topic. A man that's preached 60th year of his preaching this year, and unfortunately he was not able to be here, and so that breaks my heart that it's that way. But he did, elders, just so you'll be aware of this, he said, I owe you one, and I'll come at my own expense and do anything you ask me to do. So when we need the lawn mowed, we'll get Hardeman to come down and mow the lawn or something. I mean, that's... But he was so unbelievably apologetic, and he just had to cancel up at Cold Harbor, where Bill's an elder up there. Last week? You start Monday through Wednesday. Is that how you go?
No, Thursday.
I mean, Thursday through Sunday. Okay. And they have a lot better lectureship up there, a lot more speakers and everything, and it's been great. I remember years ago when in Birmingham, and we were writing those flashcards that, you know, they were used here way, way back. You may have seen this. It's got a Bible question on the front side and a Bible answer on the back side. And we decided to write a series on the home. And we wanted to do some of those things, and you've seen those lists, 10 commandments for husband, 10 commandments for wives. But we'd made a rule in writing those flashcards that we'd never ask a question on the front of the flashcard. We couldn't have a verse on the backside. I mean, the whole design of that is to make sure the Bible's taught. What are those 10 commandments for husbands, 10 commandments for wives? Well, your mind immediately jumps to Ephesians 5 and all those other verses. And then the astounding thing was that the Bible is filled with commandments for husbands. Let each esteem others better than himself. That's not a commandment that's directed directly to husbands. It's just a principle by which your life is governed in relationship to that. You have aught against your brother, go to him. Ever think about that in relationship to husbands and wives? That's one of the great, great commandments. And so all of a sudden, that just opened my eyes to the fact that whenever we start talking about giving advice to somebody, that we don't have to just go to those verses that talk to husbands and wives and in relationship to being elders. We're not limited to 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1 and maybe a few other passages like that. So as we were designing this lectureship, obviously you open this book up, and man, there are proverbs all over for husbands, and proverbs for wives, and proverbs for children, and proverbs, you know, that are specifically directed about the rearing of children. I mean, it's the book is filled with that. And so I'm not sure exactly where the idea first originated. What about a class for elders with Hardeman teaching it? Whoa. Looking at statements in the book of Proverbs for elders. I want to introduce this by reading to you, and a lot of this, I've just got Hardeman's manuscript here, so this is Hardeman, not nearly as good as Hardeman, you know, not the pinch hitter, but the guy off the bench because the guy's got a broken leg. But in Proverbs chapter 8, there is a glorification of wisdom. You got a Bible? Because we'll be going through this book some. And in verse 22, we have a description of wisdom. It is wisdom spoken of as though wisdom is a person. And so that's called in grammar or in English, it's called personification. Wisdom becomes like a person. And so that's what Proverbs 8 is all about. And understand that this is wisdom that is talking. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of His way. Before His works of old, I have been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there ever was an earth. Wisdom is talking. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. And when there were no fountains abounding with waters, before the mountains were settled, before the hills were brought forth, while as yet he had not made the earth or the fields or the primal dust of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the seas its limit, when the waters would not transgress his commands, or so the waters would not transgress his commands, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and my delight was with the sons of men. Now therefore listen to me, my children, for blessed are those who keep my ways. Wisdom's talking. Blessed are those who hear the instructions and or hear instructions and be wise and do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. I'll tell you, you're talking about an introduction to the book of Proverbs. This is it. I was standing beside God when God made the world. Think of the wisdom there is in nature. Just sometimes stop and reflect long enough to just see how complex nature is and how perfect the world is put together. And wisdom said, I was there. You know, wisdom is the principal thing, Solomon says. Get it. And that's what we got to do. Well, where's this wisdom going to come from? Well, that's what we're talking about, you know, in that last hour. I can find wisdom by asking other people. You know, preachers have counselors, if that makes sense. I remember as a younger preacher, I was on the phone, especially when I got back to America, calling older preachers and saying to them, "What? Let me tell you what's happening here. What would you do about this?" I said to Judy recently, you know, Brother Camp's dead and Brother Nichols dead. I said, I don't have any older preachers to call anymore. And she said, you better face it, man. You are the older preacher right now. But see, that's just the practical aspect of this. The elders at Forest Park in Atlanta, they used to take a Saturday, a Friday night and a Saturday, and go visit another eldership. I was preaching in Birmingham, and they called me and says, can you set this up with the eldership there at Shades Mountain? Shades Mountain was really involved heavily in mission work, and this is when Forest Park was just beginning. So those elders came over on Friday afternoon after work. They drove over, and they got off a little bit early, got there about supper time. And they sat down with our elders, and they got to know the elders sort of one-on-one, just sitting around the table. And then told the elder, said, we'll see you at 8 o'clock in the morning down at the church building there at the Shades Mountain. And those elders went back to the hotel where they were staying and spent the night praying that God would help them be better elders. And then on Saturday morning, they sat down with those elders there in Birmingham and says, what do you guys do when this happens in the church? Let us describe a situation. And all that is just simply the multitude of godly counselors. Now, we can't afford to overlook that. But above every other thing, we cannot afford to overlook what God says about this. And so what I want you to do is to look right now. We're going to have a discussion period right now. Is for you to look through the book of Proverbs and find some words that you think are wise that might be applicable to your life. This is the way this lectureship came about, by the way. When we were laying it out and we talked about Proverbs for teens, the preacher sat down and we read the book of Proverbs. I mean, we scanned it trying to find every verse there was in this book for Proverbs. So we made a list of them, sent them up to whoever's speaking on that topic. And I felt really foolish trying to send Hardiman a list of verses on Proverbs for elders. So I think we left him on his own in relationship to this. But just take a minute and just sort of flip through this book and find some, and interrupt me if I'm talking about one. I'll get us started here, and we'll just talk about some of these things. But what about this? In chapter 3 and verse 7, be not wise in your own eyes. And a parallel to that is in 16:18, and this is on the same topic. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. What does that tell you about the humility of an elder? I'm an elder in the church. No. God has blessed me to serve this church as an elder. And I thank God for elders, and I try to honor elders in every way that I can. You know, my dad was an elder, and, you know, oftentimes unappreciated way back yonder. I remember years ago how, you know, elders were not appreciated like sometimes they are now. But I've tried in my life to hold up elders and honor them in every way that I can. And because I appreciate them. I love them. But you see, being an elder, while there is an honor, it's not a thing to be proud about. And when he says, be not wise in thine own eyes. I don't know what I ought to do. And, you know, I've got several of the elders from Palm Beach Lakes here. And I can, sometimes I wish if you guys weren't here, I'd talk more about you. But I'm amazed when I sit in the room with elders. And Bill, you know what I'm talking about. In a room with elders, and some situation comes up, and somebody says, well, what about this? And somebody said, well, now, wait a minute. Now, what about this over here? Don't forget about how it's going to impact this situation over here. And the reality is that the best decisions that are made come not from one man. Greg, you've been an elder, what, a year and a half now? What an eye-opening experience, right? But you understand what I'm talking about? And that is, it's not that anybody in there is smart. It's not that anybody's got all the answers. And that's what this verse is saying right here. You know, don't be wise in your own eyes. Don't think you've got all the answers. There's a counterpart to this. Whenever over here, I made a note. This is my notes from some of Hardiman's. And that is, don't be the first one to speak. This is based on Proverbs 17, verse 27 and 28. Here's a proverb for elders. 17, 27 and 28. He that spareth words has knowledge, and he that is of a cool spirit is a man of understanding. I'm not sure what translation he's got here. This sounds like the ESV that I know Hardiman uses. Even a fool, when he holds his peace, is counted wise. When he shuts his lip, he is esteemed as prudent. Here's a proverb for elders. And that is, don't always be the first one to talk when something comes up. Because nobody's that smart. And wise elders would recognize that, you know, a decision's got to be made. Now, that doesn't mean you sit there and don't say nothing. I mean, don't say anything. Don't say nothing. That's a double negative. It doesn't mean you sit there and never say anything. But that individual who is noted for always talking is not necessarily a wise man. And here's a proverb for elders. He who spares his word has knowledge. what does James say about swift and slow? You know that verse? Swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. See, that's a proverb. It's not in the book of Proverbs. But what I've got to do is to take these statements and write them on my heart and say, this is the way I'm going to be. I'm not going to be the first one to speak. You know, that's not who I am. I have an opinion about absolutely everything. And I'm always right. You understand what I'm saying? Yes, Greg.
The next chapter, I just reading over there, there's a verse 13.
Since they're taping these.
Chapter 18, verse 13.
Let me read it just so it'll be on the tape, and then Greg, go ahead and make the comment about it. But 18:13, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it's folly and shame to him. Go ahead and talk about it if you like.
It's, you know, it's easy for somebody, like you say, to give their opinion before they know what they're talking about. You know, and
yeah.
You know, if you're going to be wise, you've got to listen to the matter and find out what the real truth is before you make a judgment on it, before you act on it.
Yeah. Joe?
Do 10:19.
10:19.
One of my favorites that I need to listen to.
10:19 says, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. Look at 20. The tongues of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked has little worth. Isn't that astounding? You see, if this becomes my character, this is not just something I memorized. This is who I am. This is a rule by which I live. Because this is who I am. I struggle all the days of my life with a temper. I do my best to control it. And every now and then, that really gets me in trouble by just saying too much. Well, the other 2 weeks ago I didn't, or a week ago, whatever, I said too much in an elders meeting, and then I apologized for saying I've already said too much already. But a rule of thumb that I've tried to follow is to just sit back and absorb all of those things. Because in the multitude of words, you're going to say something that's going to be dumb, you know, and it may be sinful in what you say. I think about elders that I've known in past, engineers. And they wouldn't say anything in elders' meetings. But when they spoke, there was a lot of wisdom in what they said. Now, I wish they'd spoken sooner because, you know, oftentimes they had, you know, didn't know where they were, didn't know where they were coming from. But you know, if you're sitting there and you've got something that really needs to be said, it's not arrogance to say, well, what about this? And not to push it out there like I'm the elder and therefore you got to listen to me. Because, you know, there's no such thing as an elder with authority. It's the eldership that has authority. Ray, how many years have you preached?
Since 76.
Okay, well, you didn't have the experience I've had being a young preacher.
Do you? 33 years is now.
I thought you'd been an elder before. I didn't know that for sure. Yes, I can tell you a story about that too. When I was a young preacher,
you know, I would rather for him to put his thoughts out there and let's analyze them or whatever we want to call it. Let's discuss, have a discussion, and
yes,
the right answers are going to come up if we discuss the problem.
And that is so important. You know, I preached once at a congregation where two elders' wives were in the church. Honestly and truly, the two elders, there were five elders and two women ran the church. They'd make a decision on Sunday morning and one of the elders would call a special meeting on Sunday night and change a decision. I exaggerate not at all. And I just preaching there and I didn't know what to do about it, you know. And finally, I wrote a letter for all five elders that said and sent it to the to their wives, and it says, we are so thankful to have you as our wife. We couldn't be elders if it weren't for you, and we want to tell you everything, but sometimes there are things we can't tell you about, and please respect the fact that we cannot, you know, get your advice about everything. They're just things that you don't need to know, and we so much appreciate what you've done, and you know, and it was not an insulting letter, but it not a single one of them had enough nerve to say it to their wives. I mean, but all five of them could say it to the other men's wife, if that makes sense. So a month later, Sunday night, I was walking down the aisle right before service was starting. There were these two elders' wives sitting right side but each other, and one of them turned to the other and said, I wouldn't know what was going on in this church. We didn't have a church bulletin. I wouldn't have a clue what's going on in this church. And I thought, yes. You know? But that's you have that kind of situation, and that doesn't mean that you ought not to seek advice from your wife. I mean, you know, where would you be if you didn't have counsel and advice from godly people? I mean, you know, that doesn't mean you reveal secrets and everything, but do you just say, what do you know about this? What do you know about this circumstance in the church? You know, my wife has a sixth sense that I just can't understand. We'll be going home from church. She'll say, I think they're having marriage problems. And I'll say, who? And she'll verbalize somebody. And I said, did you hear something? Did somebody tell you something? No. What? Judy, why would you say that? And then for the next 5 minutes, I preach her a sermon based on Matthew 7. Judge not that you be not judged and everything. If you don't, you know, by their fruits, Judy, you don't have a right to say this. And 2 months later, they're getting a divorce. I don't know where that sense comes. I know in raising the kids, she could read my kids unbelievably, and I was just oblivious to it. And so that, you know, I trust the counsel of my wife. She doesn't know what's going on in the church, you know. That's not what she. But that's an illustration of the kind of thing. But if you're an elder in the church, you've got to be an elder. It's not that he's the mouthpiece for her wife, for his wife, and she's the elder. I mean, it's not that way at all. And so you start looking at this, and I ask you how long you preach, because when I was a young preacher, I always had an opinion about everything, and I verbalized it. I don't know if you've ever heard this expression, if you want to know how to raise kids, ask any old maid or any young preacher. In the multitude of words, they're like, there's not one. Yes, Don.
I think many times, as an elder, we have trouble deciding what to tell our wives.
That's right.
Because it's, on one hand, it's not fair to tell them anything in the congregation that's going to hold. But I think sometimes our wives know things that we don't know. And they assume because we're elders, we do know.
That's right.
So sometimes it's a real hard area.
Well, isn't there one of the Proverbs that says, train up your wife in the way that she should go? I mean, honestly, I tell Judy, don't assume that I know anything about what's happening in anybody's life in this congregation. And I won't rebuke you for telling me these, because I need to know. You know, because I may be talking, and you can put your foot in the mouth because that person you're talking to assumes you know all of that, and it's happened to every one of us. Well, I thought you knew about this. No, I didn't have a clue about it. And, you know.
As an elder, I found that really drives me up the wall. The whole congregation knows something I don't have a clue about it.
Yes. Yes.
Like somebody being sick, for instance.
Yes.
And who's supposed to know that person?
Yes.
I tell my clue when someone is sick and in the hospital and they're home before I, as an elder, know it. I don't understand that.
Yeah. Yes, and you're in trouble because, you know, you were not there and everything, and that's when you got to learn to say, I'm sorry. You know, guys, you don't lose anything by saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong. I've just, the older I get, the more I recognize that in any relationship we have, I was wrong when I did that. I was talking about this matter of my temper, though, and let me finish that thought. One of the things that really helped me was to read the book of Proverbs through with a red pencil. and underlining every verse in Proverbs that talked about your temper. And I would read those verses again and again and again until those words become who I am. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And whatever there is in your life, whatever weakness there is, the Word of God is living and active and sharper than a two-edged sword. And when you put these things in your mind, memorize them, they become a part of your character because that's who you are. And you respond. You know, if you wait till some crisis time comes along to try to then decide, wonder what I ought to do in this situation. What's a godly thing? You got to build character in your life now before the trial ever comes. You know, if you're going to wait until, you know, something really bad's happened to decide whether you're going to curse or not, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to curse. And take that and make that application all the way through your life.
You know, what did Saul do when he found out that he was going to have a big king of the Israelites?
Yes.
What did he ask for? He asked for, and you know what? As an elder, there should be a day passed that we ask for the wisdom to ruin
I think it's great those times in my life when we've been right in the middle of discussing something and one elder might say, let's pray about that. Let's stop right now and pray about this. Why wouldn't you do that? God, we're dealing with a situation that could split this church if we make our own decision. I've got an uncle who was an elder in the church for 50 years. Can you believe that? He was 90. He was elder emeritus some at the end, but I mean, you know, whenever he reached, he was a real shepherd. The church loved him. And I've talked to some of those men who served with him, you know, who were 20 and 30 years younger than him. And they'll say, let me tell you about Willie Jenkins. That's, some of you know Ansel. That's Ansel's dad. Let me tell you about Willie. We'll be in there and he'll say to us, he hadn't said a thing in the meeting. He's been listening the whole time. And he'd say, now, brethren, we don't have to make that decision tonight. Let's wait a week. And let's every one of us pray to God every day for the next 7 days that God will give us wisdom how to handle this. And then let's make that decision. And that younger elder who was in his 60s when he told me this said, he saved us from many a pitfall. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Is that a proverb? I mean, is that a promise to elders? Absolutely. You know, it's the kind of thing that we've got to, you know, we've got to come to an understanding of it. Yes, Dan.
Another verse. Another subject. 8:6-7.
Let me read it just so that those who listen on the tape, and I doubt very seriously those on the tape are hearing your comments, but you're missing a lot. I wish you could hear them, okay? 8:6-7. This is, again, wisdom personified, same chapter. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things, and from the opening of my lips will come right things. For my mouth will speak truth. Wisdom is abomination to my lips.
My comment is, 30 years has lost the concept of integrity, and it just comes up and makes your blood boil every November, the second Tuesday in November, and we're so glad that election day's over because we get to breathe a little bit from the line.
Yes.
But I think that kind of flows over into the church, and that integrity is just a lost thing.
Yes.
In many instances.
I believe that's right. Some of the comments. Bill, do you have any comments? Or? Okay. Let me find another one, okay? 12:25. And he has about three or four on this. But listen to 12:25. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. The translation that Hardiman uses is, as I'm pretty confident, the English Revised Version. Hardiman talked to me about this about 5 years ago at Fried Hardiman. He said, "Dan, I've been using this, and it is a fabulous translation. And it's on eSword. Those of you who have eSword, you ought to use. Look at that English Standard Version. I think it's called English Standard. Yes, it's ESV. Heaviness in the heart of man makes it stoop, but a good word makes it glad." Elders need, because you live with this, with heaviness of heart. Think right now. Bill, I don't have a clue what's happening up at Cold Harbor, but there's heaviness of heart. There are situations, there are people you're thinking about, there are all of these things that are developing. You know, what are you going to do about it? Well, there is, and this is so difficult in the midst, whenever there's anxiety within you and heaviness of heart, for that not to be transferred to everybody around you. When you get depressed, does your wife get depressed? Yeah, why? You come home from an elders meeting and, you know, I mean, you're just dragging and everything. That doesn't mean you ought to be hypocritical. But you need to understand that people are looking for us. And if we're always negative and always filled with the gloom and the things of that nature, it's going to be contagious. And it'll be reflected in the church. You know, one of the things I try to do in preaching is to try to always be... to see the positive and hold up before the church the positive things.
But being depressed, is that all bad? I mean, I've come home from elders meetings so depressed, I want to do, I crawl into the lowest thing. But out of that, I put my mind to work to do something about it and come up with a workable solution.
That's right. Yes. Right, right. And what I'm saying is not to be depressed, but I'm just saying our depression can create depression in others. I've talked to Judy about men don't cry unless the world's coming to an end. You know, a woman can cry over a broken fingernail. And Judy will cry, and it's a purging thing. Get all this stuff out of her system. Well, when she's through crying, I'm so depressed, it's unbelievable. I mean, I just thought, because, you know, I don't cry over little things. I mean, I have heaviness, you know. And so it's just that kind of understanding is that her depression depresses me. I don't know how to say that. But if I walk into the pulpit and I'm depressed and I'm there and I'm not seeing the bright and the good kinds of things that are happening, you know. Stan, go ahead.
Few people in this room read this expression this morning that said, "Moaning and groaning and hand wringing won't fix this, but shepherding will."
Moaning and groaning and hand wringing won't fix this, but shepherding will. Wow. You know, it's so easy for us to see the negatives. You know, just dealing with the situation. When the church is right in the middle of something, it's just about to drive you insane. It's good to step back and see the big picture. I told the other preachers recently, you know what a great year we've had at this church? Now, I can tell you all the negatives. You know what a great year we've had at this church? Here's a Joe Quigley, 85-year-old man, has given his life to God. Is that worth something? You better believe it. Here is our Spanish work. We've been praying and praying and praying. And it's a reality. You look at you look at Troy, who's made the decision to go to a school of preaching. You know where that comes from? Well, he's got a mom and a daddy, and you know, you need to hear his dad. Dad, I spent some time talking to Dwayne today. Man, is that is he a great man? But Troy's going to go to a school of preaching because of this church. I mean, you stop and think about, you start thinking about what's happened in this congregation this year, and I could go on and on and start looking at all the great things that's happened. But it is so easy to just get right here, because that problem is just right there, and you got to deal with it and all that other stuff without seeing. And that's this heaviness, I think, then, and that's why it talks about a good word makes it glad. Is to be able to see the bigger picture of things that's happening. I mean, I feel sorry for elders. They are like people who work in an emergency room at the hospital. What do they see? They're like this policeman whose patrol area is in the worst crime area of this city. That person that's in that emergency room in the hospital, everything they see is battered and beaten. And that policeman sees the most sordid thing there is. And you stop and think about it. Elders have to deal with all of the trash. And it's easy, you know, it's easy to see all of that. And not to be able to get back and look at, you know, all the healthy people there are. I sometimes stand up there and look at our teens. Do you know how special they are? Think about, you know, those who are here, you know what their home life is like. You know the temptations they're having at school. You know what they're having to put up with. And yet I stand up there and preach, and man, they are just unbelievably interested in everything that's going on. I mean, there's a lot of good things. Ray, you had a comment. Yes.
And I've come closer to quitting at that time as an elder.
What elder who has not done that?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
And they're going to think, well, I can get this one to heaven.
That's right. You know, and there are folks that are going to go to hell, and elders need to learn how to identify what's their problem. When you've done everything, you know, when I was a younger preacher, man, I'd go out and teach somebody and they wouldn't obey the gospel. I'd stand up and preach in the church and the church wouldn't change or anything. And man, when I was a younger preacher, I used to get so depressed about the fact that I just can't convert anybody. But then I started thinking about, what's my problem in this? The fact they obeyed the gospel, that's their problem. It's not mine. My problem is to go into that home and do the very best that I can. My problem is to walk in that pulpit and throw everything I've got into myself when I'm preaching. And if folks don't change, they've got a problem. And I have to deal with the consequences of the decisions they make. But the fact they're going to hell is their decision. And I believe that's the only way I know to be able to put things to bed. And to say, you've made the worst choice there is. It's the father of that prodigal son who knew where his son was. But that's not his problem. His problem is what to do about that son, but the fact the son's living that way is not his problem. And the fact that, you know, folks in the church break your heart, that's not your problem. It's something you've got to do everything you can. But when you've done all you can do, that's all you do. All you do is all you can do. And when you've done all of that, let me point out one or two more of these. Hardeman, by the way, I don't know, is this one in the book? One of his lectures is in the book and the other is not. Anybody have a lectureship book, Joe, if you got one? If not, we've got these printed out special. They're laying there under the tracks, the one that's not in the book. But this thing is outstanding. He must have 15 Proverbs for elders in here.
It's not in here.
Okay. So it's over there under the tracks. Make sure all of you guys in here pick up the copy of that. He got this here. He got the Worthy Woman. He got that acrostic that he did on the Worthy Woman. And then this one just got here too late. But here is one that says, "He who oppresses the poor reproaches his master, but he that hath mercy on the needy honors him. Whoever stops his ear at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry, but not be heard." That's the poor man. "Open thy mouth for the dumb," talking about the deaf, the mute, "in the cause of all such as are left desolate. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and minister justice to the poor and the needy." And the verse he's got cited here is not the right verse. I don't know where that is. It may be. Maybe it's early enough in that chapter. Well, he's got the... Hardeman would make a mistake. I had to make it. It's 31, 8, and 9. I thought 31 was the virtuous woman, but that's only the latter part of that. So he's probably right about that. And that is, I think that elders need to always understand, don't overlook the least in the kingdom. One of the qualifications of being an elder is without partiality. And they are those members that just drive us up the wall. And responding and dealing with them. And then there are those folks that are easy to deal with, and showing partiality in relationship to them. What Proverbs says is this poor member. Here is this person who's uneducated. Here is this person that we might describe as the least in the kingdom of heaven. And we need to be just as concerned about that, the least in the kingdom, as we are the greatest in the kingdom. If I went to the hospital, you know how this church would respond? I think I know how it would. But think of how many times names are mentioned in this church of people who are sick and in the hospital. We never pay them any attention. We have our favorite people. Jesus had favorites. He had 12 above the multitude. He had 3 above the 12. And he had 1 among the 3. But Jesus is also concerned about that woman at the well. She's the outcast, the woman who's had 5 husbands. He's concerned about that Gentile woman, that Syrophoenician woman. And he's concerned about those little children. Keep those kids away from Jesus. And the widow of Nain. I think it's one of the Proverbs that's here when it talks about those poor people. And those people who are handicapped, those people who are the least in the kingdom, the whole principle. And that needs not to be something, well, oh me, I got to be kind to this person. No, I don't have to consciously think about being kind, because that's who I am. But to become who we want to be is whenever we put these words in our hearts and in our lives. Look in Proverbs chapter 1 and look at how many times the word "my son" is found. Proverbs 1:8. I've got the wrong Bible. That's not where it's underlined. Help me as you see. Proverbs 2:1, "my son." Proverbs 3:1, "my son." 3:11, "my son." 4:1, "hear my children." 4:20, "my son, give attention to my words." 5:1, "my son, pay attention to wisdom." 6:1, "my son, if you're a surety for your friends." here's Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, giving advice to his son. Now these words are from God. And God is saying to us, my son. And in this chapter, he says, chapter 6, verse 20, my son, keep your father's commandments. Now he's talking to his own son about, listen to what Solomon says. But think about this in relationship to God. Dan, keep God's commandments. And don't forsake the law. Bind them upon your hearts. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak to you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is a light. Reproofs of instruction are the ways of life. When I think about guide, guard, and direct us, when you roam, they will lead you. They'll guide you. They'll guard you, keeping you from situations that you don't need to be in. And they'll direct you because they're a lamp. And if you want to change your character,